Ruskin and Zach.
Oh, it's Ruskin and Zach. Relationship Tuesday brought to you by Cupid's 866-285-4005.
Go to their Facebook page. They had a little thievery going on. If we can identify them, Jason will take care of you, and then we'll take care of you too. Let's identify these punks and cut their fingers off. That you or me?
That was me.
Okay.
I had the volume up.
That's a $2
fine. I was watching a clip during the
yes, you were.
Break, and I didn't find the one.
Yes, you were.
I was watching where Big Dan T is telling George Clooney about selling Bibles in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Big Dan T!
Because we...
Big Dan!
We were
sitting in the Ruskin and Zach wing of the building that has air conditioning, I'm happy to report.
Yes,
and we discovered Matty T today on the halftime show.
Yeah, it reminded me of that line in that movie. He's like, you don't say much, but when you do, it's whatever the word is. And I salute
you. It's important.
Yeah,
it's important.
Yeah.
He's like the wrestling manager that when they're in the corner, he hits you with the cane.
Yeah.
You don't see it coming, but Matty T just slides in there. And, yeah. His farmer's only joke today was funny.
Oh, and he had the production ready.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, he had it ready. I mean, bam. It's like he thought through it, which is a totally foreign concept around here.
That's right. Yeah.
And he actually thought through that. We were absolutely stunned.
Yeah. All right. It is time now for the SEC report. Brought to you by Eat My Catfish.
Started 11 years ago in a trailer in Benton, Arkansas. Now has locations in Benton, Little Rock, Conway, North Little Rock, and Fayetteville. They use fresh U.S. farm-raised catfish, crab legs, gulf shrimp, po' boys, and more. Don't forget Mama's tartar sauce. It's a true family recipe. It's Eat My Catfish. Now open in Fayetteville. Alabama coach Nick Saban on Monday pushed back against the idea that money is the primary motivating factor in attempting to put on a college football season. Saban was asked after practice about the importance of the sport, and he delivered a long and passionate response that got bordered on boring and touched on school pride, saying, quote, "Now, is it more important than public safety?" You want me to do this in my best Saban?
Yeah, do it.
I don't do a Saban. He said, "Is it more important than public safety?" No, I don't think so. Is there a way that we can do it and keep people safe? I think a lot of people are trying to do that. And if we can do that, I think we can play.
Okay.
And get paid. Tennessee football.
Both things are true here. This is not an either or. We live in a binary world. This is not binary. Like, they're playing football to save these athletic departments and because the players largely want to play. Like, two things are true here, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I learned today was Tuesday, and I'm pissed. Today, Tennessee football will be selling tickets for approximately 25% of its fan seats at Neyland Stadium this fall. That was announced by Tennessee officials. Stadium has a capacity of 102,455, and counting everybody in the building, which means around 25,000 fans. DePaul has hired Dwayne Peavy as its athletic director to replace retiring Gene Lenti. PB, previously the deputy athletic director at the University of Kentucky. This is kind of alarming. Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons, Oregon tackle Panay Sewell are among 11 players selected to the Associated Press All-American team who are not going to be playing this year. Star power in college football is way down. Cincinnati football coach Luke Fickell finalized a contract extension through the 26th season that will increase his annual salary to $3.4 million. NC State has paused all athletic-related activities after identifying 27 positive cases within the athletic department. That, according to the school on Monday, not all of the cases involve student athletes. And that is your SEC report brought to you by Eat My Catfish.
Yeah. It's like Matty T's like Big Dan says in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? You don't say much, friend, but when you do, it's to the point, and I salute you for it.
I love that scene. And
then he beats him up with
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, my God. What are you
who's
doing?
In it? It's
Clooney, Clooney. And John Turturro.
John Turturro
and,
is in it?
Oh, and the third guy is, it's got Papio Daniel. What's his name? He's in everything.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
No.
Sotomayor.
He's Doc Hopper in the Muppet movie. Charles Denton? No. What's
the
name?
Muppet movie?
Yeah.
Which came out in, what, 79?
Yeah.
Okay.
Charles Durning, that's who it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's got Charles Durning in it. It's Pass the Biscuits, Papio Daniel. A bunch of people in
what
it.
Year did that,
Holly Hunter's
what,
in.
What year did that come out?
Like 99, 98, something like that? Maybe 2000.
Yeah, those were my drinking days. I don't remember.
No, of course. No. These are your drinking days. What are you talking about?
You got that right.
Those are your drinking days. Give me a break. All right. Oh, yeah. Mark and Jonesboro with the great line from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's a Coen Brothers movie. They don't make bad.
Oh,
I love the Coen
Brothers.
In this place, he's at the store trying to order more hair treatment. because he wants FOP. He doesn't want FOP. He's a Dapper Dan man. And so the guy at the store is like, it'll take you about 2 weeks to get it here. And so Clooney's character goes, well, isn't this place a geographical oddity? 2 weeks from everywhere. It's funny. All right. So there you go. Oh, this is another note here. Mm-hmm. I was looking over Broken Arrow stuff.
Yeah.
And they have a guy named Sir Johnson.
Good name.
So I feel like I'm obligated, should he score, to say, yes, sir. Right? Like, that's the call, right?
They also have three guys wear number four that play cornerback.
But I'm going to do it Vern, like Nicholas on 17. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Like, that's what I'll do. I won't do it excited because he plays for Broken Arrow, not for West, but...
We can talk to Luges about that on Thursday.
That's right. Yeah, I wonder.
See how he's going to handle the three number fours that play corner.
That's right. Here's another thing that I don't know if you noticed this, but I noticed these things. You have to deal with multiple numbers. Okay, fine.
Most of them play, one will play offense, one plays defense, one might be a kicker.
Broken Arrow has two number fours that play corner. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that's going to be navigated, but that's...
Is that technically against the rules?
No, they can't be on the field at the same time. That's against the rules.
Yeah, I knew that.
But you can't. No, I don't think that's... There's nothing wrong with that. Mm. Technically, I don't believe. I'll take a drink of my water. Hey, this coaster worked out, man. I was banging the cup around during Jordan Black, and you didn't hear any of it on the air. No, this is very perfect. This is great. I'm very thrilled with this purchase. These coasters. All right, so we were talking about the identity of Razorback football. And what that is, and somebody pointed out in one of these texts that we got that the identity is, you know, the old football follies videos that you used to get with Sports Illustrated, right? Like
the Dial M for Moron, right?
The you know, the one with... Do you remember the one with Jonathan Winters?
Of course.
And Maude Frickett doing the...
Maude Frickett. Oh, yes, those boys are going to run through there.
Yeah. Remember that?
Wow.
Wow. By the way, Aunt Blabby from Carson, a total ripoff of Maude Frickett from Jonathan Winters, but I digress. So the identity right now are those two blunder plays the last couple years. The North Texas deal, and your program is summed up as a blooper right now. That's what Sam Pittman is up against now.
Hang on. You say two blooper plays.
Huh.
The punt against North Texas and the French mistake.
The French mistake, yes. That's against it. Auburn last year, yeah. And those are what people think of now, are these two football follies, right?
Right.
I love those videos, man. Those are fun. Sometimes they rerun them on the NFL Network in the off season. But yeah, it's North Texas and it's the French mistake.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you. Just clarifying.
Okay.
French mistake was brutal.
I thought you were gonna play it. Here we go.
Touch your hands. Hey, you know what? We can't do that. That's a Milbury situation.
Oh. God, everybody's so sensitive. Yep.
The 2020 Karens don't like that movie anymore.
The world sucks.
Yep.
They ran... never mind. That movie is out there. They have a bunch of warnings on it. And I think even Mel Brooks... That movie's on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. And I think Mel Brooks recorded something to explain to the idiots what the movie is about.
Yeah.
The movie is about making fun of the racists, not glorifying them.
In Hollywood.
That's right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And...
The fact that people are so dumb that they have to have stuff like satire explained to them, it tells you a lot right there.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. When it comes to things like that, they read the headlines. They don't actually read the articles. Yeah, right. I mean, that's you look at the picture, not you don't actually watch the film and understand the film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's 1874. We could sue her.
That's right. Eddie Lamar.
Tiddly.
But the identity of Razorback football is a blooper right now. That's kind of what it is. So, I mean, that's the deal. That's what you're up against.
They tried. Under Chad Morse, they tried to change the identity from the big, lumbering, power football, Alex Collins coming straight downhill, to the more modern spread offense. You just had a guy who just couldn't teach it well enough or explain it well enough to translate. And look, if he gets a third year, if he gets a fourth year, maybe the results are different. But I think they were spiraling so far out of control that it was just one blooper after
nobody
another.
Was believing what he was selling anymore.
So you bring in a guy like Kendall Briles, you get Felipe Franks, and you're going to try for the third time in 4 years to try and change the identity of the program again. Yeah. Arkansas football is known as a ground and pound, and they always have been. If you go back, I mean, go back into the 60s, the 70s. I mean, you can rattle off the names. Ben Collins, Barry Foster. Name all the guys. They ran the football. They ran the football. Cedric Cobbs, Darren McFadden, Felix Jones,
Even Bobby Petrino had Niall Davis and Ronnie Wingo.
They ran the football. They played defense and they ran the football. Those are simple things to do. Those are effort type things. You don't need 6'5 wide receivers that run 4.2 40s to run the football. Arkansas's history is lineup, here we come.
I feel like I don't think Chad Morris knew how to build a football team. I mean, when you're offering 48 wide receivers, you don't build a football team that way. Chuck you Barrett, build from the inside out, Chuck not Barrett the outside said that in.
On this show last year, you it's a line of scrimmage league. You build inside out.
That's right.
Yeah. And he was going. Now look, they tried something different and it didn't work. They tried to get,
but that plan never works. When you start at the outside and work your way in.
It does work, but it's not going to work in this league. Mike Leach builds his teams that way. When he was at Washington State, when he was at Texas Tech, he had great skill guys, terrific skill guys, because that's what his offense calls for. But those leagues don't play defense.
Right.
In the SEC, you've got creatures playing defense. People that are not born on this earth, but are given scholarships from Mars. These guys can run, jump. They are huge human beings. You've got to be able to establish the line of scrimmage in this league or it doesn't work. You cannot constantly have your offensive line going in reverse. Can't do it.
What's funny to me is the last two head coaches over there. Now, obviously, Pittman knows this because he was in the league and a few different times. But the last two head coaches have said that. And then after Pittman left Bielema, he said it and didn't do anything about it.
Okay.
Pardon me. Yeah, it's a little sneeze. I'm fine.
COVID!
He didn't do anything about it. And then Chad Morris said all the right things and then didn't do anything about it. That's something I don't know anything, but I know this. Pittman knows what it takes, and he's going to have a plan that reflects that. It's not going to be shallow words about, it's a line of scrimmage league. Like, he knows that, and that's what his plan is going to reflect.
The last time the offense was really humming was under Petrino, right? And it was a balanced offense. They ran the ball okay. They threw it pretty well. Brett Bielema tried to out-Alabama without Alabama's players. Yeah. And that's not going to work. You have to have a little bit of balance. But I'm just telling you, Arkansas's identity through the years, 50 years, 100 years of football, is line up and run it.
Yeah.
Run the ball.
No.
They've gotten so far away from that, it's ridiculous.
Here's what I want to see is, this seems like where this is headed. We don't know until we see games. But it seems like this is headed. I want to see this offense where Boyd busts one for 15 at a first down, and then everybody on the ball again. Like the tempo with the running, I'm intrigued to see. I think that's what the Kendall Browse wants to do. I mean, they're not going to huddle. We know that.
I play count is going to be huge because the disparity in play count. If the defense is out there 80 to 90 plays, they're in trouble. I think Kendall Browse. I think he wants to go fast. I don't think he can right now. I think you can do it in spurts, but I don't think you can line up like he was doing at Baylor, where with Robert Griffin, when he would just line up and boom.
It's a different league. You can't do that. Yeah.
You can't, especially when you don't have the talent.
There's a balance though, because you can have success that way.
I think you do it the way Gus does it, which is if you gain 15, you're on the ball quick.
Yeah.
If you lose 3 yards, maybe we slow it down and sort of regroup. The thing I'm concerned about is if there's the defense is out there for 90 plays and you're only running 65.
Yeah.
That disparity will eventually catch up with
you. The worst thing is the 90-second three and out possession.
Oh, like that 90 is, seconds. I've seen three and outs go 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you're throwing your defense back out there.
Yeah. And even if you have two television timeouts sandwiched around that, that's still only about 5 minutes of six minutes of break there.
That defense is so thin as we stand here right now. Now, they may develop depth over the season. You may get some of those freshmen in there. But do you want Miles Slusher running around in the secondary game one against Georgia kids just out of high school?
No.
He may be a very talented player, but that's not a guy that you want out there on day one against the University of Georgia. The idea is for Franks and that offense, Rakeem Boyd, look, they've got running backs here. They've got running back depth. They have actual depth. Control the football. If you hit a big play, then you go.
Even that'll be different. Even that's different. Hitting a big play and then being able to hit the turbo button is different. They didn't do that in the last two. When they, on the rare occasion they would hit a big play, they didn't do that. It was all just. And I'm looking forward to an era in Razorback football where the words match what we see, which is what did not happen for 1 second under Chad Morris. Nothing he said matched what we saw. I'm looking forward to an era with this group where the words will sort of match or get a lot pretty close to what we see.
I think they tried. I really do think they tried. They just realized they weren't talented enough at the most critical spot on the offense to do what they needed to do. This year, they've got a guy. They've got a guy who has done it before at a very high level in this league. He has played in this league. He has been successful in this league. My question is, if you're Kendall Briles, are you talking to Barry Odom saying, dude, you know, I can run 65 plays. Again, that's a big number for me is watching that play count. If George is up around 70, maybe not Georgia. George is probably a bad example, but the Mississippi schools, if Kiffin or Leach is up around 80 plays, you're in trouble. That means a thin defense has been out there for a very long time. And, you know, Leach's offense is all vertical. Everything's going down the field. That's 40-yard sprints on every single play. Your guys are going to wear down if you don't have depth. So if it's imperative to me, if I'm Sam Pittman, I'm telling Kendall Briles, you have to control the football. You have to be able to run the football.
Yeah,
you've got a guy who can do it.
There's a balance there because you want to play offense a certain way to take advantage of mismatches if you get them. But at the same time, you'd like to, it's one of those things like, can you have everything? You really can't have everything. Because you want a 7-minute possession that ends in a touchdown, but you also want to be able to play quickly. It's hard.
Take this. If you gave Pittman, Odom, and Kendall Briles George's roster, you can do whatever you want. Kendall Briles could run up and down the field and do whatever he wanted.
You have creatures at that point.
Exactly. Yes. That was the way George's defense was described to me, as a bunch of creatures. You don't have that. So what you have to do as a coach is you have to develop a plan to basically mask your weaknesses. And I'm not talking about schematic weaknesses. I'm talking about your deficiencies in depth. You don't want Bumper Pool out there for 80 plays.
No.
He won't survive.
But, yeah.
Lasts four games. I mean, you've got a guy that's out there 80 to 90 plays. I mean, over four or five games, it's 450 plays.
He's
not going to survive.
Let me throw this at you, because someone may be out there thinking this. They're thinking, well, I mean, we can't win if we play fast. We know we can't win if we play slow. We've seen that. Well, how do we win? That's what someone may be asking right now, because this conversation sounds like there's no way to do anything because you don't have the horses to play slow, and you can't play fast because you leave the defense out to dry.
Navy does it. You minimize possessions. If a team is, I've watched Navy do it to Notre Dame. I've watched them do it to really good football teams where you minimize possessions, they execute and score. Well, now the pressure's on the more talented team to come back and answer. Well, then if they don't, they're a possession behind, and you're limiting possessions. If Georgia doesn't have the football, they can't score.
I just can't imagine a Kendall Briles team ever having a 9-minute scoring drive.
I'm not talking about 9 minutes. I'm talking about limiting the number of possessions.
That's how you limit possessions. You hold the ball for a long time on offense.
Or you put them in a position where if you can get two scores up, then you just slow it down. You don't have to necessarily run the ball every single down, but you run that play clock down.
Now you're talking about Musselman taking the air out of the ball with 8 minutes to go.
Okay. Correct. That's exactly what I'm talking
about. Which people hate, but
you know what?
The math works.
If you can get into a situation where you can get two scores up and you can run that play clock down and just start chewing up time, you don't have to change what you're doing.
No.
You simply, it just takes you longer to get there.
Yeah.
There's nobody in the stands that's going to be going, hurry up with a 14-point lead.
No, that's right. Yeah. But in basketball, it's so funny. I just thought about that because, you know, Musselman, you know, when they get up 14 with like six to go, like do the math, people. That's a 4-possession game. You're limiting someone if you hold the ball to 6 possessions.
Mm-hmm.
So that means
yes,
they're going to score on all of theirs and you score on none of yours. Not likely.
Inexperienced teams, when put in a position where they know they're supposed to win, take Georgia. Georgia's going to bring in a brand new quarterback. We don't know who it's going to be, but if you can get them down and make them chase you, every possession they know is at a premium, that they're only going to get a certain number of possessions, the pressure starts to mount. And I've seen teams crack under it.
Yeah.
But now the flip side of it is you have to execute. You have to get to a point where you have the lead and make them chase you.
And you just can't imagine that level of execution required to play that way in year one of anybody. much less a roster that looks like or a program that looks like it's faced NCAA sanctions, so it's looked the last 2 years.
But this is, look, Pittman and his group have got to come up with a strategy to mask those deficiencies. The talent gap between Arkansas and Georgia is wide. So what do you do to minimize or to maximize your potential to go in and hang with them? Minimize their opportunity with the ball, maximize your time. You've got to, every drive you have to have ends in a kick. Preferably one that's kicked off the ground. Field goal or an extra point. Yeah. And I think Kendall Briles will, I think once that offense gets going, Georgia may be a bit of a stretch because it's early in the season. But if that offense gets going, they can put up points.
But you're discussing a scenario that is very unlikely this year. Arkansas getting up 2 scores on any of these teams is just,
I don't think
it's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible if they are coached well enough. If you can get, all you need is, you get the opening kickoff, you go down and score. You need one stop, and you're up 14.
If you go down and score the next time.
I mean, you're up 14.
Yeah, but there's still, 45 minutes left in the game at that point.
But what you're doing is you're ratcheting up pressure on teams that, frankly, haven't had a lot of practice. You're ratcheting up that pressure. Make the more talented team chase you. Figure out a way to get the lead. And once you do, I've watched Navy do this to everybody. Navy does this to teams that are far more talented. They went into Ohio State a couple years, damn near beat the Buckeyes because Ohio State couldn't catch them. Every time Ohio State scored, Navy scored. And it was alarming to watch because there was nothing Ohio State could do about it. It took one great play from Terrell Pryor to knock them out. And it was one of those just off-schedule type deals. But if you get into a situation where you can make the more talented team feel the pressure, you've got a chance to upset somebody. Georgia, I think, is a bit of a reach. Alabama's a reach. Tennessee's gettable. Florida is gettable.
Florida's gettable?
Florida's gettable.
What?
Florida.
What is this sorcery?
Florida, look, every year somebody in the country is that team everybody's all hyped up on. Every single year. You look through all your preseason manuals. There's one team, everybody's on that bandwagon. Florida's that team this year. They're not Georgia. I think Tennessee will get them. I just don't. I don't believe in Florida yet.
We have another poll we need to add here. Mm-hmm. Crazier preseason claim on this show: 2-2 to start, or Florida is gettable.
Florida,
you can let us.
Florida
know
is fucking gettable.
I don't know. That's. I don't know.
Here's a text of the 479. Says, "When did I start drinking? That was 8 a.m., sir."
Yeah. Tommy Kraft texted me and said, "You're still running a fever. You need to go lie down."
I'm not running.
Florida is gettable.
It's gettable. Every game is gettable if you play well. But I think Kendall Briles and that offense can put up points when they want to. Problem is, the guys on the other side of the ball, I don't know if they can stop anybody. So what's the tipping point? What's the balance point for that? I think you've got to minimize your possessions. Kendall Briles and his group can't run 90 plays. And I don't think you can let them run 90 plays because over a 10-game schedule, it's simply not going to work with the depth that they have. Florida's gettable. Tennessee's gettable. Who else I got?
I can't even use the hangover thing a week after playing Georgia that Florida's gettable.
Are they playing Georgia the week before?
Yes.
Florida's gettable.
Oh, God.
Florida's gettable.
Oh, God, no.
It's their biggest rival.
No, you want them before. Looking ahead.
No. You want them the week after. They get beat up by Georgia in Jacksonville. Let's say they go into that game and it's a 4-5 matchup and they get hammered by Georgia. You want Florida the week after Georgia. Who do they have the week after Arkansas?
We are going to have to administer a COVID test to Zach during the commercial break. They go to Vanderbilt after Arkansas.
Yeah, that's a head game. I didn't like that part. No, the week after Georgia, fine. Fine.
Florida. Are you telling me there's a path to 5 wins?
I didn't say that. I just said Florida was gettable. It's not getting crazy. Text of the 479 says, "I need to go visit a wood chipper."
Fine. Not to make light of the situation, but you need to be tested for something over there.
DQ, you believe in me, right?
She goes to that school. She doesn't even believe in you. All right, we'll check on the poll questions coming up.
Florida's gettable!
I don't know. Ruskin and Zach.
across Arkansas.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
Well, football quickly approaching. Good to catch up with our next guest once again, Tom Luganville from ESPN. Of course, you know him from college football. He'll also have some high school football this weekend as Bentonville West travels to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. We'll talk about that and everything else. But it's good to talk to you again. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. It's actually good to be talking football and maybe seeing light at the end of the tunnel actually having it.
Yeah, no, I mean it is happening. It looks like for now anyway, and the SEC's pushing forward. And boy, Arkansas did not get any favors from the league with the two extra SEC games being added, being two of the top teams from the other division in Florida and Georgia.
Yeah, nobody is welcome the Razorbacks with open arms as it comes to this schedule. It was going to happen to somebody. And I know there was a lot of upheaval amongst the coaches in the league when the schedules got released. I know that Jim Fisher wasn't overly excited as well. But it is what it is. You got to go out, you got to play the games. And I think if you followed Arkansas at all, particularly over the last year, I had two of their games a year ago. There's nowhere to go but up. And I think there's a big canvas here, regardless of what the schedule is. This is about building a culture and a foundation for what you want to be. You know, once you start getting into the recruiting cycle and get some classes coming in there, 2-3 classes in a row, I don't know if it's so much of a focus on, well, can we beat those guys right now? Of course you want to win. Of course you want to compete. But I don't know if that's what the program's about right now for them.
Maybe it's just a perception, but it just feels like they've taken giant strides forward in just stability, adding Felipe Franks, adding some of the veteran transfers, and just more stability. It feels like the foundation for the program is now actually on concrete in that quicksand.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Really, no, it started with what was, believed to be a very, very surprisingly strong recruiting class. I mean, they did a really good job down the stretch in a very short period of time, gained a little bit of momentum. That rolled into your offseason. Of course, we've got COVID and all sorts of things taking place, but they did a really good job, I think, of addressing some areas of distinct concern. So, of course, the quarterback was one. So, whether it's Lee Cornfield, whether it's Lee Frank, you have vastly upgraded that position, which was a real liability a year ago. And so, I do think that there is a direction that they're going here where, they've raised some eyebrows and it's very clear that they hit the ground running and we're wasting no time making moves.
I want to get your thought on this because I've heard some people talk about the kind of first month or so of this season, how the teams that are new with whether it's a new offense, a new defense. In this case, it's pretty much a new everything at Arkansas versus the established programs that have not had coaching turnover or system changes in this offseason. How kind of far behind a place like Arkansas might be in the short term because everything's new and there just hasn't been a lot of time on the field to work on stuff?
Hey, it's a great question, and it's a great point to be made, particularly coaching staffs that are new, that took over other jobs. Mike Norvell's another one that comes to mind, Florida State, his tech. I don't so much believe it's about the X's and O's as much as it's about getting to know your team and your people. You know, one of the most valuable things in an offseason, particularly when you're having a coaching change, is what takes place in your winter conditioning program and your spring program. And that dialogue and that interaction, particularly with your strength and conditioning staff and the information that is relayed to the coaching staff in the sense of saying, all right, we've got a worker over here. We might need to move away from this guy over here. I'm not sure about this guy yet, but we might have something over here we can work with and continually get to know the personalities of the kid. Who could be coached hard? Who needs to be handled differently? Having that interaction in and out of the building each and every day. You lose that, and you're trying to build your team and, build your scheme without having that innate knowledge of who the guys are because you had to send them all home. And I think that's a real challenge for new coaching staffs. And then when you're able to get back and you're able to work out, you know, obviously, but you kind of start the reintroductory phase once again to try and gather as much information to know where your strengths and your weaknesses and your unknowns are so you can prepare for it.
Tom, you played the position. Felipe Franks, you mentioned that he was a massive upgrade over what you had last year. What do you see in Felipe Franks as a senior starting quarterback in the SEC?
Well, he's been through a lot. You know, he's a guy that has had a lot of ups and then he's had quite a few downs. I think the knock on him has never been about physical talent. It's never about can he make the throw. You know, he's got all that stuff. Consistent production where there's steady improvement that's sustained. Yeah, you know, to some degree, he's had a little bit of a yo-yo career. You're up and then you're down, and then you're up and then you're down. And I think having been through a lot of that, having been under a ton of scrutiny at the University of Florida, I get him. It's probably fresh air. He knows that it's a different environment. It's going to be a different team. It's going to be a different locker room. It's a different fan base in terms of how they react. I think it's going to be something that will be healthy for him, but he is an upgrade. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. He gives them a better chance because of the experience, because of some of the scenarios that he's dealt with, to bring some maturity to that football team.
We're talking with Tom Luginbill from ESPN here on Ruskin and Zach. We talked about this, and love your opinion on it, Tom, the last few weeks, about the key really to all of this, because everybody buys in during training camp, and everybody's on board then. But what's going to be crucial and what hurt Arkansas the last 2 years is, and there's no doubt with this schedule, there's going to be a losing streak at some point. It's just a matter of the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
How will Sam Pittman be able to keep these guys from letting go of the rope? Because honestly, Razorback fans saw some let up with the team over the last couple years.
You know what? I think he might have already solved that issue because you saw very little departures in the offseason. You guys just fleeing. I mean, you got two true freshmen a year ago and Traylon Burks and Trey Knox. All of a sudden, you know, those are some guys that you can depend upon now. And so I think the football team is, they're hungry to win. They're hungry for direction. They want to be led and see some results. Are they going to come immediately? No. I think that when you get hired and you've had an opportunity, I know it was brief, but you had an opportunity to at least speak to your team and let them know what we're trying to accomplish here. Kids want that. They want structure. They want a direction. They want discipline. They want to know what's going to be expected of them. And then you go out and play. You do the best you can. I'm not worried about first-year coaches in any way, shape, or form trying to hold the thing together. Now, what you can find sometimes is, and I'm sure this is going on over the last 2 years, and it goes on many football teams, is they might find out as a coaching staff and continuing to get to know their team that if they have any of that, they might have to remove some elements. They might have to make some shifts. They might have to say, listen, this isn't how we do it here. We're going in another direction for the overall health of the locker room and the chemistry of the football team. But I think those are a few things that will reveal themselves that can be dealt with at that time.
Tom, we've had a discussion here the last couple of days about, I mean, I think Arkansas's offense has talent, and I think the offense will be able to put up points, but they're on the flip side of it, the defense is really inexperienced, really, really thin. We've had these sort of philosophical discussions about protecting the defense, which goes against everything that Kendall Briles stands for as an offense coordinator, where he wants to go fast, fast, fast.
Yeah, there's no question. And it's really, you know, if you're going to go fast, 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 you better get third downs and you better get first downs. I mean, that's the thing. Everybody talks about tempo. Tempo only works if you get the first down. All right? If you don't convert third downs to get that first down, then you're not very fast. And so the defense is going to be heavily reliant upon the offense staying on the field and completing drives, giving them some rest. And, yeah, Kendall Brown's going to want to take some shots. Is he going to want to, you know, have a two-play drive every now and then for a lot? Yeah, but he's also going to have to understand it's not just about the offense, which he knows, and that they're going to have to be very protective of not only probably a lack of ideal talent, but certainly, as you stated, a lack of depth. And it's a long season with quality opponents. The offense is going to have to help out in that regard. It really is. I mean, talk to any offensive coordinator in the country that's running any form of tempo, any form of up-tempo and fast-paced stuff, they're going to tell you it's all great until you can't get that first down or that second first down. And then all of a sudden you're out of rhythm, you're off schedule, and you're not fast.
And what happens is, you know, you have a minute and a half possession, and the defense comes right back on the field.
Right back on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Tom Luganville is our guest here on ESPN. As you look at this conference as a whole now, as we've had some practice in training camp, just kind of, is it Alabama? Does A&M sneak up? Just how, who's the favorites here to win these divisions, in your estimation?
Well, for me, it would be Florida in the East. I still think it's Alabama right now in the West. I do think that Texas A&M has a football team and a roster that is really, really talented. My question is, I'm sure it is with every other college football fan or pundit or broadcaster or media member, is Texas A&M, with all the resources and talent on the field, to stop being an 8-win football team? At the end of the day, in order to be what Alabama is, in order to be what LSU and Auburn have become, in order to be what Georgia and Florida have become, you have to beat those guys, and you have to have those matchups and win those games continually, or you will continue to be an 8-win program, and that is the program that should not be an 8-win program. I think we all agree with that. And if there was ever a roster for Texas A&M to push that limit and to get over that hump, it's this one. So the excuses are going to run very, very thin if this isn't a 9-plus win team, all right, in this upcoming season, because I think they're capable of it talent-wise.
I heard a little hesitation when you said Alabama. Are they in maybe as much flux as they ever get into this year with all of the turnover? Two is gone. They don't kind of know who the quarterback is. And when you talk about the West, I didn't hear you talk about LSU at all.
Well, I think that, you know, with Alabama, they have the components that they do have returning, particularly offensive line, okay? Particularly with their skill positions, even with the loss of Jerry Jeudy and Tua. We've seen them win before with Jacob Coker. We've seen them win with Blake Sims. They haven't always had to have the dynamic guy at quarterback because they've been so talented everywhere else. And I think they're going to get a lot of talented guys back on defense that they lost even prior to start of last year. It really had a negative impact on their ability to perform. So I actually think there's going to be some part of Alabama's football team will be stronger than the one that put the field won 11 games a year ago. For me and LSU, I think any time you have the type of magical season that they had a year ago, and you have everything that happened to them the way it happened, very, very, very difficult to duplicate that, particularly when you have distinct losses up front in the offensive line, which they do. All right, you have some shifts in the coaching staff. Obviously Joe Burrow is gone, but as you referenced, so is Tua. I just don't know if you're going to maybe have that same magic. Do I think they're a contender to win the conference? Absolutely. Do I think they're a contender for the college football playoff? I absolutely do. But I also think there's some questions that need to fall into place with some sturdy answers. And, you know, quite frankly, Miles Brennan hasn't played near as much football as Mac Jones has. And then we don't know what the young guy out of modern day that's going to be joining Alabama quarterback, what he brings to the table. So I'm withholding a little bit on LSU until I see what they are up front in the offensive line and how the quarterback performs.
Tom Luganville is our guest, ESPN, and on the call Saturday for the high school showcase game with Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, taking on Bentonville West. And I'd love to get a thought or two on that matchup from you, Tom, because I know the Bentonville West people, I've called their football game. I've called every football game they've played, and there's a lot of excitement. This is their first time being on national TV, and, I mean, it's excited to get football back and to be on ESPN. It's a big deal to these kids.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting because it's two contrasting styles. You know, with Bentonville West, you know, talking to their coach this week, we want to go fast. We want to be up-tempo. We go 100 miles an hour. We want to get as many plays in as we can. And conversely, Broken Arrow wants to line up. They want to huddle. They want to slow everything down. They want to run the ball down your throat. So it's going to be two completely different approaches on what's going to be a very, very hot day It's been my experience with these high school games. I've done over 100 of them over the last 15 years that your kids have to settle down. They're excited. You're probably going to see some sloppiness early. An unusual offseason, an unusual training camp. So, you know, for both teams, they need to settle in, play their game. Don't worry about the cameras. Don't worry about all the signage and all of that stuff to them. It just needs to be another game where you have an opportunity to showcase yourself on a national level. So it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to – I've always enjoyed these games because, to me, the purity of the sport, all right, lies at this level. It's within this level, and this is where – You know, I have a young son that's going into ninth grade, and this is going to be his first experience. This season got postponed, but I always just love watching high school football, not so much from a recruiting perspective, but just to see the joy and the passion and the purity of it, the pageantry that goes along with it, is something that I've always appreciated.
Folks here in Northwest Arkansas know about Bentonville West. It's just their fifth year in existence, and for them to play a national showcase game is pretty impressive. But most folks around here don't know about Broken Arrow, and they've obviously got some high-end prospects we need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you need to figure out where Marion Horn is going to be lined up. He's going to be the Where's Waldo. Where is he? Is he in the backfield? Is he returning kicks and punts? Is he playing corner? Is he playing wide receiver? Is he playing slot? He would be the most dynamic player on the field for Broken Arrow. It's going to be somebody you have to account for on every single play. So I think that's going to be something to look and something to key in terms of how Broken Arrow chooses to get him the ball. And then I think the other thing that's going to be interesting, and I was talking with Coach Pratt earlier this week, he said the difference in philosophy on defense for Broken Arrow, they've made a complete shift to being a sit back, read and react, cover four zone team, to being a team where they are going to pressure, they're going to zone pressure, and they are going to blitz on just about every snap. And so that's going to have to be something that with Bentonville West and their philosophy offensive, you got to account for that. You're going to have to account for the pressure. You're going to have to expose it. I learned one thing as a player and used to teach it as a coach. If you prove that you can handle blitz, they will stop blitzing you. If you don't, then you're never going to see the end of it for the rest of the game.
Tom Luganville with us here on Ruskin and Zach. Again, that's 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon, Broken Arrow and Bentonville West. I don't know if this is a big secret or anything, but you guys are going to be in the studio calling this, right?
Yeah, it is a new world, guys, in every way, shape, or form for broadcasting. We hope it will sound the same. We hope it will have a familiar look. But yes, we will be calling games remotely, out of a studio, off of monitors. So, you know, you lose that ambiance, lose that in-person feel. We're just doing the best we can. You know, these are unprecedented times, requiring unprecedented circumstances and adjustments by all. You know, as a broadcaster, you guys have been in it. We're going to have a delay that's not going to be easy because we're going to have to our producer, and he's going to be ahead of what actually is happening with the action, timing that up with the play-by-play. There's inherent challenges, and you just got to go with the play.
When they kick this thing off, I mean, these teams haven't met before. They're not in the same conference. They come from different states. I mean, when you get these sort of interstate matchups, what's the first thing you're looking for in styles?
I'm really looking, particularly when it's early, I'm really looking to see. Because when it's hot and you're in the middle of the afternoon, it will become very apparent which team is the better conditioned team. And depending on how many players you dress, you know, some high school varsity programs dress 40, some of them dress 105. Well, if your numbers are low, so your numbers being high, you can get gassed pretty quickly. So I think I'm always looking to see which team seems to be in the best shape because that game can get really, really long. So that'll be something that we'll be keeping an eye on early.
All right, Tom, as always, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
The Bad Boys of Arkansas Radio.
This is Ruskin and Zach.
We're back 26 minutes in front of 5 o'clock Wednesday here on Ruskin and Zach.
on the radio, on the all the smart speakers, wherever you're listening. We greatly appreciate it. Nikki Chavanel is our guest now from Rivals and Hogbeat.com, H-A-W-G. Hogbeat.com. As training camp continues, they're on the field right now, right, Nikki?
I think so. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I think they are, and then they have a scrimmage on Friday, which we won't be able to see either, but then we'll get Coach Pittman and a couple players after that at like 7 o'clock on Friday.
All right. So the, you know, the obvious first question is, if with someone observing training camp closer than Zach and I are, and probably most people, what are your takeaways so far through the first handful of workouts that we've either seen or read or heard about?
Well, like you guys, I am not out at practice. Hutch goes out there for us, but I've obviously been tuned into all the interviews and stuff, and it sounds like things are going really smoothly with the offensive install. Felipe Franks has the confidence of his teammates early and the coaches, which is obviously different from last season. They've already essentially named him the starter. They haven't put anyone else with the ones, so he has that locked up. The offense looks really well established already, except for a few spots on the offensive line. So that is another advantage that they didn't have last year. I think they were still figuring things out for quite a while last year. And they have like the actual depth at offensive line where they can, you know, really work on finding the five best and then, you know, the next five as well. So like what we're hearing from the offense, you know, we don't get to see a lot of execution, but some of the guys like Mike Woods have been posting videos that look good. So that's good. But then, you know, we obviously also hear stuff from guys like Jerry Jacobs, the corner from Arkansas State, who says, like, you know, he's been having great weeks. He's gotten a few picks. Joe Fouché's gotten a few. So we don't exactly know what those situations are, where they get picks, who they're picking off and stuff like that. So maybe, you know, it's hard to tell just like how good the team is, obviously. So, but the defensive line is coming together as well. It sounds like they know who their front four are going to be, with Jonathan Marshall, Xavier Kelly, Dorian Gerald, and Julius Coates. That's really exciting. It's a much more experienced line than, especially on the ends, than last year. So, and the linebacker position still worries me, but it sounds like through, you know, five practices that they're looking good.
Outside of Bumper Pool at linebacker, who's going to line up next to him?
Yeah, well, Grant Morgan is still filling that spot. A lot of people hope that, you know, Levi Draper, the Oklahoma transfer, will eventually beat him out, because, you know, Grant didn't start last year, obviously. So you want to kind of elevate that position, and it's going to be really important. You only have two linebackers on the field for the most part in Barry Odom's scheme, so those two need to be really solid. But yeah, it sounds like Greg Brooks is coming along at nickel and has a real hunger about him, which is good because he struggled last year.
Where's the pass rush coming from? I mean, I think it's assumed that these defensive ends, Coates and Gerald, are just going to simply be able to push, you know, and Kelly and Marshall will be able to push the pocket back, and you'll be able to get edge rushers. But again, none of these guys have done this before. Where is the pass rush coming from?
Yeah, it sounds like Dorian Gerald and Julius Coates have been getting after the offensive line a lot.
That's not a good sign.
I'm a little worried. Apparently right tackle is getting beat up, and that's one of the spots on the field where they're not totally sure right now who is going to be the starter, so that's kind of expected. That seems like it's going to be a weak spot. I think Dalton Wagner, who started at right tackle last year, along with Colton Jackson, those two guys had the most sacks allowed on the team, so they need to figure that out. And then Ricky Schomburg and Ty Cleary are still battling it out at center, but it sounds like Schomburg is solidifying his position more and more.
We're talking with Nikki Chavanel from Hogbeat here on Ruskin and Zach. One of the things we've been kicking around here the last couple of days, Nikki, is more, it's not as much talent, it's philosophical. Well, I guess it is kind of talent, but it's philosophical. If the offense scores or has fast drives that don't take a lot of time off the clock, that's going to expose the defense more because they're going to be on the field longer. So how are they going to strike this balance of tempo, but also trying to play a little clock control so you don't have a defense that's on the field for 85 plays a game?
Well, I think the defense is already kind of used to that. I mean, it was up-tempo. It was supposed to be up-tempo last year. I think the difference is being up-tempo but actually getting in the end zone. Like with Morris, it was fast, 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 but then, you know, you have to punt it. So the defense was just back on the field with no points to show for it. So I think that's going to be the difference. It's a lot easier when you're not, you know, constantly playing from behind.
I'm banging the drum. I mean, the offense is going to have to play ball control there. I mean, it's not Navy-style ball control where you're doing 11-minute drives just to shorten the game. But I think that's part of the game plan is you can't leave that defense out there 70. What, Derek, what'd you say?
Last year they averaged 70 plays a game.
It's too many. They're not deep enough to stand. I mean, you're not deep enough to withstand 10 SEC games with your defense out there 70 to 80 plays.
Yeah, with Rakeem Boyd and Treylon Smith hopefully being what a lot of people talk about, I think they'll be able to stay on the field a little bit longer and extend drives by running the ball a bit more than maybe Kendall Browse usually does. It's a pretty even split already, but increasing your run game can keep them on the field a little bit more.
It's going to be fun to see how they kind of strike that balance of the two things there that they're trying to do. And you've got a piece on Hogbeat today about something that's been a common thing around this program the last few years, young players getting a chance to play in big spots right away.
Yeah, Sam Pittman. I mean, a lot of people, when the NCAA said, we're going to extend a year of eligibility for everyone, including seniors, so they can stay another year, a lot of people are like, well, what about all these freshmen? You're going to have all these freshmen wanting to play. They're going to get upset if they're not seeing the field. Well, Sam Pittman came out yesterday and said pretty unequivocally that it doesn't matter if you're young. If I feel like you have the potential to be better, I'm going to play you. And even if, like, you're not yet better, if I think that, you know, getting you on the field is going to develop you faster, I'm going to do it because your ceiling is higher, and I want you to get you to where you're going to be. And that's kind of too bad for the older guys, but, you know, they've had their shot. So, it's good to hear.
So I'm going to ask you a question, and you may not know the answer to this, but special teams have been, to be kind, a disaster the last couple of years. I mean, North Texas, Auburn, I mean, it runs like a Sports Center highlight. I mean, what are they doing now that you've got a special teams coordinator? So I think just by osmosis, you're better. But where is this? Who's returning kicks? I saw, Treylon Burks is learning how to catch punts properly. How about just catch the damn ball? That's fine. I don't care if it's right or wrong. Catch the damn ball.
Well, yeah, you have Treylon Burks, and he's expected to do both, you know, punt return and kick return, along with Devion Warren, who was pretty good last year.
He's out of Highland, right? He's out of Highland. Devion Warren?
Devion Warren? I couldn't tell you. He was before my time covering recruiting, so I don't know all the older guys and where they're from.
That's just my ADD kicking in.
Before Devion got hurt last season, he was doing really well. It's just like, you have to find a balance between playing, you know, your best defensive players on special teams. You want to play guys that don't play on defense as much on special teams to give them a role, to give them something to do. But you can't sacrifice, you know, good tackling and speed and stuff. So I'm sure Scott Fountain, he has a plethora of experience. He'll figure out the right balance to strike. But with Treylon Burks, the only thing you have to worry about is potentially getting injured. We know that he can be pretty explosive with the ball, and he's not easy to take down either.
Devion Warren is a senior from Monroe, Louisiana.
Not right. Close.
Not Highland, Arkansas.
Who am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Deion Stewart. Never mind.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, he's gone.
Okay. He gone.
Thanks.
We're talking with Nikki Chabanneau from Hogbeat. There is a lot of attention being put on, there's a lot of stuff being written about Treylon Burks the last few days. I'm just wondering how he's handling that kind of scrutiny and attention, you know?
He's such a laid-back guy. Like, he's such a quiet, internal person. I don't think that even if we asked him, he would, you know, really express much worry about it. I think he's looking forward to it. He's had high expectations on him since he was in high school. So even coming from Warren, Arkansas, like, everyone knew his name. He was an early top 250 player, so everyone was paying attention to how he was doing. I know that he wants to get on the scoreboard for sure. That was a huge letdown last season for him to not even make it in the end zone, except for one play, I think, that was called back because of a penalty. So, but he's just like such a quiet, like internal guy. I don't think we'll ever see him being like shook.
Are they going to go running back by committee? I mean, they're deep enough to do it, I think. I know Raheem Boyd will get the primary workload, but I mean, this, if you're going to try and control the football, I mean, you've got to do this with multiple running backs. You can't just keep giving it to Raheem Boyd.
Yeah, and hopefully Treylon Smith is as good as what we saw last year in practice. That was just practice, but he's really shifty and quick. And then you have some bigger backs like Amonte Spivey and Dominic Johnson. We still don't really know what to expect from them. The one memory I have of Amonte Spivey last year is against Mississippi State when Arkansas was already down by a ton and he fumbled the football, like just something little like that, that we just don't have a ton of experience for him to draw on. But I'd like to think that they're going to kind of give him a shot and see how it goes in these scrimmages. But after that, if they have to limit it to just two guys carrying the ball, then I think they'll do that. Because Raheem Boyd, anytime you don't have him on the field, like you're risking an opportunity that he might break a 50-yard run.
Yeah. Vicki Chabanel from Hogbeat, H-A-W-G, hogbeat.com with us here on Ruskin and Zach. So let me just frame this for the audience so they can kind of understand. So the scrimmage is Friday. And the only way that we're going to find out what happened is they're going to tell us what happened in there, correct?
Yes, okay. Pretty much. We might hear some, you know, insider scoop leaking out, but I doubt there will be much. And we'll get a little bit of video to maybe put some things together. But it's really going to be what Sam Pittman wants to tell us, I think.
So don't be making sweeping conclusions based on Friday's scrimmage.
Because it's fun to do that.
Okay, it is fun. Fine, you're right. I'm sorry. I don't want to rain on the parade anymore. All right. Nikki Chabanel, hogbeat.com. You got any specials on the website right now?
Well, we still have our first responder deal going. So if you are a first responder, you can email me at nchabanel@yahoo.com, and you'll get the full year for just 25%. So I think that's like, you know, $25 out of the 100 that you would normally pay. So really good deal. We want to thank all the first responders, and that's also like teachers and stuff. I know you're not a first responder, but in this trying time, and it's very, very important. And then students, these college students who are, you know, paying for the full college experience and not actually getting to, you know, have the fun. If you want to email me, I can get you a sweet deal too for a whole year. So just hit me up, nchabanel@yahoo.com.
All right.
There it is.
Nikki Chabanel, hogbeats.com. Thank you, Nikki, as always. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Happy to have you along here on Ruskin and Zach. Did you see that KFC is not going to say finger licking good?
We are way past the line on this. It's a slogan.
No. Well, it's due to coronavirus.
I've never gotten coronavirus from eating KFC.
I specifically watched a medical person. You know, they do these deals where they're at taking questions from people.
Mm-hmm.
And someone was talking about, well, what if it's in the food?
Oh,
and the doctor was like, it's a respiratory illness. You can't eat it. Like, it's not a foodborne illness like E. coli or salmonella.
Deep fry it? Wouldn't that kill any sort of bacteria?
Probably, yes, but it's foodborne, like,
right.
There are different levels of diseases. There's foodborne, like when, you know, your chicken's not cooked well enough, like salmonella and E. coli. And then, you know, like, you can't get a cold from chicken either, mm-hmm. or strep throat.
Or lupus.
That's where, yes, it's,
you're not catching any of that stuff.
So you can't eat it, but I don't. And the whole thing on finger licking good is you're licking your fingers. You're not licking someone else's fingers. So what's this is way.
What kind of.
Well, you are. I mean, that's why they say it. This is a bizarre.
Here, lick my fingers.
I mean, it's just, it's bizarre.
Do you lick your fingers after like eating ribs?
I've never licked my fingers after eating anything ever. Right. No.
New poll question going up.
No. I just don't understand why
This is, and I also don't understand, like, how does this whole thing work with sports letting fans in the stadium? And I saw this with Miami. Miami's got this new language on the ticket agreement that you can't sue if you get coronavirus. Well, how does that work if you take a city bus or an airplane? Like, is there language in there too that you can't sue?
I don't know, but I am going to be interested. Do you have to sign a waiver, DQ, when you go on your trip?
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, you just found out when the flight was taken off.
I don't know anything. I don't know anything about this trip.
Like,
do you have to sign a waiver to get on a flight?
I would think where we are now, I would think people know the risk when they go anywhere. You can go to the grocery store. Yeah. So do you have to sign something to walk into the grocery store? No. So why would you have to sign? Why would this just seems like CYA mode, which is exactly what it is by these teams or whatever. Why would anyone be able? No one would be able to sue you if they caught it at a ball game. Can they? I mean, they went there of their own free will.
How would they
knew the risks involved.
How
in
would
the
you
pandemic.
Prove that you caught it?
That's the other thing. Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you what, there are 1,500 ambulance-chasing attorneys out there
that would like to give it a shot.
They're like Saul Goodman advertising on the park bench that would love to love to get that settlement.
That's true.
We don't win for you. You don't owe us a dime. So, I mean, that's...
Did
I guess
they have the class action lawsuit when the plane crashed?
Who did? Saul?
Saul.
I think... Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe he did. Yeah.
I don't mean to talk about that with, you know, you leaving town, DQ.
Yeah. There's someone that took a class at one of the local places, center or whatever. So they had to sign a waiver saying that you...
Did you have to sign a waiver to go to class?
No, they didn't really screen us at all.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. They're also not going to tell you if anybody in your dorm has
let's
it.
Yeah, let's go over the protocol at the University of Arkansas, student life, or residence living, whatever it is. If someone catches it, they're not going to tell you... where they live or what floor they're on. So you don't know.
No.
They didn't really screen everybody, according to DQ. And what was the other thing we discovered yesterday?
Oh, they're going
to
write you up if you're not socially distanced.
Oh, but they did give us a thermometer and some really bad-smelling hand sanitizer. Mm.
Yeah, why is
that's
this,
like what we got.
Can I ask another question here on hand sanitizer? Like, when is Purell going to be like back online? Like, I haven't seen a bottle of Purell on the shelf since this began.
You remember when we couldn't find toilet paper?
Yeah.
That was fun. What was it? What was after that?
But we figured that out, though, and they ramped up production, and now I think most people have toilet paper. But, like, where's the Purell? I only see Purell at restaurants. Like, they've got it because they've got the inside track with their suppliers or whatever, but, like, it's not on the end cap at the store anymore. Like, where did the, when are they going to ramp that up again? When are they going to fix that?
I don't know. Amy Hot Springs texts in. She says, I've flown multiple times since the epidemic started and didn't get sick. Wear your mask. Well, I mean, Amy's probably had them all, so she's probably immune to all of them.
Yeah.
Bama Rooster says, if someone can sue because they spilled hot coffee on you, then yes, you can sue for corona.
Yeah, you could sue, but it's... Are you going to get it? It's going to get thrown out, right?
Is it?
If you get, I mean,
is it?
If you're a...
You sure about that?
If you're a rational person as a judge, like how does that have any grounds? You did everything. You understood. I mean, the person who would be the plaintiff in this case. You understood the climate. You understood the risks and you did it anyway. How is that their fault? I don't understand that. Like, if somebody, and we have, Sturgis happened, and like, there's one case out of Sturgis.
Yes.
100,000 bike people, and you know none of them were wearing masks.
And none of them are from North Dakota.
And they were outside again.
Right.
So, here we are. All right. Oh, so Scott in Salem says here on the text machine, the restaurants just have the Purell bottles. That's what they did. They've done that with ketchup for years. Like, they'll have the glass Heinz bottle on your table, and they ain't putting Heinz in that thing.
They're not?
No, God, no. No, they don't refill it.
Wait a minute.
Places do. Like, the crappy places don't.
Wait a minute.
The good restaurants do, though.
Well, you're telling me that somebody, like, refills the ketchup bottle?
Well, yeah.
Ugh.
for God's sakes. You are such a wuss. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You've been married twice? How the hell did that happen?
It's amazing what you can do with roofies.
Jesus God.
Yeah, braces.
What's wrong with them?
That's illegal. That's illegal.
What's illegal?
Doing what? Refilling ketchup bottles.
So you think that every time they bring out a new ketchup bottle, you've never seen them fill the ketchup bottles? Like 3 in the afternoon when it's slow, that's what they do. They go around, they fill the ketchup bottles up at restaurants. Well, in the old days, not now.
What are you doing? Stop it.
That's what they did in the old days. Now, you know, you have to donate a pint of blood to get ketchup at a restaurant. It's not even sitting on a table anymore.
Well, I got confirmation here. Says it. This person's done it before.
Okay.
That is just... That is not... No. 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 Next, you're going to tell me that Chad Morris was a great coach.
No. I don't think I'll ever say that. No. I don't believe that's something I will say.
So... When the ketchup bottle's empty, they take it into the back and refill it?
Yeah.
And you're okay with this?
I don't see what your hang up is about this. Like, explain it to me. I don't understand.
Why can't you just get a new bottle of ketchup like everybody else, like every other normal person?
What they do is you buy the glass bottles once, and then you get this giant like keg of ketchup in the back, and you refill it from that. It must be cheaper to do it that way. I've never run a restaurant. I don't know.
Isn't that not sanitary? Is this how we got COVID? Because you didn't refill the ketchup bottles?
How is it not sanitary? The ketchup coming out of the keg, if you will, has not been touched. And then it's going into... No one's running their finger in the bottle.
Obviously, you've never been to a restaurant with a child.
No, they're not putting their finger in the bottle.
I know one that did. Stuck his finger up in the bottle. Ew! Did they wash the bottles out?
Probably? I don't know. It's called Mary and the Ketchup. You've never seen a Mary the Ketchup at a restaurant before?
No! I was under the assumption 10 minutes ago that the ketchup bottles were new!
Then what about these other, like, diner places where you just get the squeeze bottle? How do you assume that's happening? You know, where you get the red squeeze bottle?
Right.
How do you assume that gets in there?
I thought it was a new one!
Oh, wait a minute.
And I'm being told that, no, we didn't. We just refilled it. No washing. I'm going to be sick to my stomach.
You honestly thought.
Yes.
Wait a minute. You thought that anytime a restaurant ran out of ketchup, they put a whole new bottle out there?
Yes.
And they didn't.
Isn't this some sort of health code violation?
No, it, clearly not, because it's common practice in the pre-pandemic world.
Really?
I can't believe you knew. You thought that.
I feel like a Pollyanna. I mean, I've asked for new ketchup bottles. Little did I know that the ketchup was... Oh, gross. Oh, so gross.
Oh. That's unbelievable. How do you not know that?
I have to ask. Yeah. So, if you go to, like an Asian restaurant, and you... Oh, this is... Ugh.
What?
Like the soy sauce, is that just refilled?
I don't know how it works there. I've never seen them marry the soy sauces. I've only seen them marry
the
ketchup.
Sriracha?
I don't know how that works either. I've only seen them.
They're not giving me a brand new bottle of sriracha every time I ask, are they?
I've never seen that. I've only seen them marry ketchups. It's what you do.
What about like the red pepper at like a pizza joint?
Those things are not changed for like 20 years.
Ah!
What are you talking about? Come on. The Parmesan cheese?
Well, now the Parmesan cheese, you've got to like bang on the table to get it to... Oh, God.
That's why you ask for ketchup packets, Zach.
Yeah, you got that right. I'm bringing my own from now. I'm going to be like my grandmother.
You're going to bring your own condiments?
I'm bringing my own. Yes. I'm absolutely bringing my own condiments. It's like, no, baby, I got this one. You think I'm lying? I'll have a holster. I look like Batman. What do you need? Relish, ketchup?
You're going to have the whole carrier with linen parings, ketchup,
mustard,
the whole thing on there.
I'm going to start carrying a purse full of condiments.
57 A1.
Yeah, what do you need? 57? Who needs 57? A1, what do you got? Who wants some Liam Perkins? My whole world just got turned upside down.
I can't believe you didn't know that. Oh, my God.
They don't read. These are not. No, they are new because I've opened them before and they pop.
Sometimes you get a new bottle. Yes.
Oh, I should just consider that my lucky day.
That's
I should go
right.
buy a lottery ticket that
Sometimes
day.
Sometimes you get a new bottle.
Hell,
yes.
Honey, the ketchup's
that's
new.
You do know when that happens, that's a brand new bottle. Sometimes that happens. Because, you know, bottles break, stuff happens.
Here's a text from AP in Fayetteville. They have 5 gallon buckets of soy sauce to
I'm done.
There you go. Okay, so they marry the soy sauces too.
Oh, God.
Wow. I feel like we've changed a lot of lives today here on Ruskin and Zach. Broken a lot of hearts.
Well, I think we just changed one.
No, well, that's true. Yeah.
Apparently, I'm the
everybody
only one that didn't
knew
know.
This except you.
What?
All right.
My life's never going to be the same.
I'm bringing my own ketchup.